Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. This is your host, Michael W. Dean, and today we are speaking with Randall Perry. How are you doing today, Randall?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. What are your areas of expertise?
Expertise that I can acknowledge. Computers, security networking, telecommunications, actually firearms also, and financial matters. Like, I was a securities license at 1.2 for investing, but mostly for the past 17 years, I've been a professional IT consultant.
Huh. And what are your areas of expertise that you can't talk about?
Oh, probably things that I wouldn't articulate very well.
Okay.
Or things that are above G-rated, you know.
So
no security clearance issues I can't talk about.
Okay. So I'm not asking for an admission of any involvement, but do you believe that the things that were posted on the Freedom Fiends recently that were purported to be from an IP address of the United States House of Representatives, do you believe that that was actually from the House of Representatives or not?
I believe it's from networks that they have under their control.
Do you believe it was actually somebody who works at the House of Representatives or not?
No, I don't believe that it was at all. And if you'd like, I can explain a little bit how that infrastructure works without getting too detailed, but to explain why that comes into being. And it might explain, too, where those Wikipedia edits come from also, because I know that's probably something at the back of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Explain that, please.
Now, you know that the representatives are all based in D.C. and basically live there, even though they're supposed to be representing districts from the different states that they're from.
Yeah.
Now, when they're sent up to D.C., they then set up at least one, sometimes several, support offices that then become like a hub for collecting information from their area, and they use that to funnel it back to D.C., to those channels. So they will have support staff there that keep the pulse of the community, of the local party that they're affiliated with, and they use it as mode of communication. Now, to keep them more tightly in the loop then, a few years back, they started linking them into those networks more directly. So they use PVCs, they'll use leased T1 lines.
What's a PVC?
Private virtual circuit. That used to be the big thing to do. Back before VPNs over the internet were very viable, when internet connectivity, I remember paying for T1s back in the late 90s, you'd pay $1,200 to $1,400 a month just for a T1 line, where now there's like $250 for a T1 line, where you can get extremely fast broadband for much cheaper than that. But back then, you didn't have options. So what the phone company would do on your behalf would basically create a limited private loop for you and run it between data centers and metropolitan areas like Detroit to Grand Rapids, or from D.C. to New York City, and you would pay, and it was based on how much bandwidth and for the distance. And I remember paying for a connection from Walmart Town, Bentonville, Arkansas, up into another area that was 800 miles away. And for a 56K private connection, that was costing over $300 a month. So a PVC gave you dedicated circuitry, which means it wasn't shared bandwidth either. It was truly dedicated, and you couldn't have it eavesdropped on anybody coming through. So that was the way. Those are still around as well. But what's more common now is just getting an internet connection and then laying on top of that with, site or an IPsec tunnel or something that would encrypt the traffic for either a point-to-point connection or for a Road Warrior style VPN where you could connect from anywhere. Now, back to this situation, how do you get these offices remotely connected to where their main person who's put in office, their support staff gets to them, is they get connected with a PVC or a VPN to that network. It allows them to do processing for Social Security or for other forms and documents like that they want to interchange. But a funny thing about that, too, is that these people all around the U.S. then are mapping through that connection, even for their internet traffic. And they'll use that as their default gateway, so all their internet traffic gets proxied through there. Now, I'm not sure if they're doing it so that they can keep better tabs on where their people are going, or that it allows and offers up a bit of privacy because then it all comes from that one central location. I mean, it certainly isn't for performance reasons because it you're basically choking them down, and the bottleneck is going to be back at that, you know, at that DC branch. So when you see, like, things that happen with Wikipedia edits and that, those aren't necessarily coming from DC, but more than likely they're coming from remote offices they're tied into and connected to that, and anyone can tie into that. The Wikipedia edits that have come into public knowledge about them being edited by people from that IP, it doesn't surprise me at all, because I have heard conversations and being around politicians and being around those offices. I've heard about them hiring people that are into blogging or writing articles and getting tied into social media. And it certainly sounds innocent enough at first as to get people to speak positively about them. But they bring in people like interns to take care of that stuff. They don't control their content, but they kind of lead them a little bit on where to go.
Now, why don't you think that those same people that are doing the Wikipedia edits could have been the person that did the insulting the Freedom Fiends for Congress?
Oh, because I don't think Boehner did that.
I don't think Boehner did it either, but, you know, it could be some disgruntled new intern. But you're just sure it's not?
I'm sure it's not. I don't think they're intelligent enough to listen to the scenes. They okay. should be.
Do you use internet encryption for email?
For certain folks, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even have your key. I should.
Yes, you should. I'll have to send that.
Yeah.
To you in a private message. It's,
yeah.
It's interesting how we trust plain text communications and people fall back to that. And we know in the back of our mind, too, it seems innocent enough that we don't feel compelled to, I don't really need to secure it. But the time isn't to secure it when you have to, because then it's more suspect, you know, that you want to protect things. It's for the same reason that if you always succumb to certain seizure, but when you get pulled over, and then the only time you object is when you have something that's objectionable, you become suspect anytime someone says, no, I don't want you to search. Well, you wouldn't want that if you didn't have anything to hide, and it immediately incriminates you for wanting to protect yourself. So you should always want to protect yourself at all times, and not just when you think that you should be. And I know I'm guilty of that too, just because I have a lot of people I contact with, clients and just other emails that don't seem too important that need encrypting at that point. But when you see traffic that is plain text and just using SMTP handshakes going over the internet, and all of a sudden there's just deluge of encrypted traffic that looks like a bunch of gobbledygook, that looks kind of suspect. And those patterns are telltale signs of when things are going wrong. Or at least things that raise eyebrows. It's true in any aspect of your life. It's true with your electric bill, too. If your electric bill is normally at a certain usage, and say it's costing you $80 a month, and your bill skyrockets to $160 a month, a lot of people become immediately suspect that they're running a like a grow shop.
Yeah,
your utilities went up.
Someone was actually raided in Canada based on an electric bill, and they were not growing marijuana. They were actually running a Bitcoin mining operation. And being Canada, of course, the government sent the people a bill for the cost of the raid.
Oh my goodness! That's
yeah,
nuts. I had a good friend of mine get a visit from the utility company to check him out because he had a rapid decline in usage. And what he did was he put a wood burner on his house for heat, for supplemental heat, and it was enough that it knocked his utilities down by. About half.
So they thought he was cheating somehow?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they thought he was cheating somehow. So they do watch that. And that in and of itself is not something to really be shocked about, but you should just, it makes you aware that, wait a minute, if you know that, then that means you're watching him, who's nobody. You're watching me, you're watching everybody, and looking for that just one little piece of evidence that would cause that suspicion to get a warrant or to send somebody out there to further investigate. I know people that have had that happen to them with livestock even, where they had the county sheriff's department called on them for having a horse that someone reported was being mistreated, but it was actually a miniature horse that was older, and he was just laying down in the pasture because that's what he liked to do. And they would call out the sheriff, and then it would call out like somebody from, I don't know if it was the Humane Society, someone that's supposed to be an expert in animals, they'd come out there and verify that there's nothing wrong with this animal and leave. Well, after three times, the police told them, you know, you really need to move this horse somewhere else because this is becoming a nuisance. And there was never any abuse. There's never any proven abuse. So they had to move the horse to another pasture that was on someone else's property that was family member.
Huh.
Because they were harassed into it. And this is the same lines with encryption, utility usage. When you just even appear to be out of normal, that's enough to make you, guilty.
Well, back to, when is the right time to use encryption? I totally agree, and I've been trying to push the idea to people that they should be using it now while it's legal and while it's not that weird. In the same way that, you know, I think that the opposite idea of saying, well, when things get bad enough, I'll learn to use it. That's kind of like saying, well, when the shit hits the fan, I guess I'll buy a gun. When the shit hits the fan, you're not going to be able to buy a gun. And if somehow you're able to, you're not going to be able to learn to use it. So, you know, I do think it's better to do that kind of stuff when things are good. Now, let me ask you this, though. How strange does it look to the powers that be to even use encryption now? I've had people say that using it is causing myself more trouble than not using it. What do you think about that?
Well, it depends how it's done. Sometimes, I've had to advise other people who are overseas for doing, taking care of some security in some obscure ways. Like, there were some people who were missionaries in Hungary. And like in China, things are controlled and they're under great scrutiny. So for hiding messages, I showed them, this is 12 years ago, I showed them a simple way of hiding messages and images where the alternate tag information that in the image isn't always used, and you could hide it like in bitmap files, but you're hiding it in plain sight. So you weren't appearing to be anything weird or different, because to somebody else who would be taking a cursory glance over it, everything looks to be in the normal. And I think that the more that you can not draw attention to yourself with that, like with the encryption, once people start doing it, it'll be like a red flag to suspect everybody at that point. And then people ruin a good thing. It's almost like having a good fishing hole to where, yeah, it was good until everyone started doing it. Now you've ruined it for everybody. So if you can do other ways of like hiding stuff, like hiding it in plain sight, using encryption, but it looks like it's part of something else. Like I would encrypt my flash drives, but not the whole thing. I'd use like TrueCrypt and then dump files on there. And you could put an extension on it so it looks like it's supposed to be another file, like an AVI file or a movie file. And then if someone can't open it, it just looks like it's a corrupted file. Now, someone with a little bit more experience would analyze that file and realize, well, wait a minute, this pattern has nothing to do with it. There's no header on it or footer that looks like an AVI file or doesn't look like an MPEG file. This must be something else. But, you know, you could also pass it off as being, no, it must be broken. It must be a broken file. That was my home video.
Now, but, I understand, you know, that kind of idea, but what about with people like you and me who publicly, using our real names, tell people how and why they should use encryption? Do you think that that's suspect?
What do you mean, suspect for us or suspect to the people who are associated with us?
Either, or just to the man. You know, I mean, do you think that there's somebody from the federal government who part of their job during the week is to read the Freedom Fiends blog and listen to the Freedom Fiends podcasts and make notes?
There are people that have those jobs. And it's not just conspiracy. I've talked with in other areas and things that have happened. I've talked with people from the FBI agents on specific issues, and I've talked with people from the NSA, and I've talked with people in all walks, even from the Secret Service. They actually have a cyber division at the Secret Service, because I've spoken with them at 1.2. And it's funny to see where there's people I know from other areas. Like, I know someone who's, at that time, he was one of the key people at Microsoft for their security. He's one of 8 people responsible for application security. And we kind of bumped into each other online in one of those, like it was a black hat group or gray hat, I don't remember. And I posted something in response to something that Script Kitty wrote and put up there. And I corrected him and said, that's not right. And, you know, I didn't think much about it. And then they get a message back from me. It's, what are you doing lurking there? I said, what are you doing lurking there? And it turns out that we weren't the only ones. There's a lot of other people who are always there. You see it at DEF CON and that too. These people that pop up, they're from any law enforcement branch. There's people who work as attorneys who show up there. Because I've had other people tell me, hey, if you're going to DEF CON, I'm going there too. And these aren't kid hackers. These are people who work in D.C. You know, it's it's kind of interesting and eye-opening when you realize that out of the room, there are a lot of people being represented by every agency. And there are people whose job it is to monitor social media networks, news groups, email lists. And they just sift through that stuff. And they're not real responsive sometimes because it's just part of their other, you know, duties.
How offensive, man. How offensive is that, you know?
It is. But, you know, I heard the same thing from a friend of mine who got me into, he was an accountant. They got me into doing investment stuff a few years back, and I got my securities licensing for investing and all that. And his relative of his worked for an agency to where they even had to, you know, mask his identity and things like that. Well, he was telling me that a local demonstration that was a city around here, they had like a Ku Klux Klan demonstration, like a march and a little deal. I don't know. I wasn't there. So I don't know how big it was. If there was 100 people showing up, 200. Well, his uncle was there undercover, and his uncle ran into somebody else who was also marching in the demonstration. He was like, hey, you stole me $20 in that poker game. There's another undercover guy from a different agency. And in fact, there was people from the county law enforcement there. There's people from the ATF that were there. And I think that it ended up being like, if you picked out the people that you knew who didn't belong there, about half of them were law enforcement.
Yeah, I've heard that. So, something between like 25% and 50% of the KKK is government agents. And there was actually a kind of joke saying in the 50s that probably had some truth in it, was that without the dues paid by undercover agents, the Communist Party of America would have gone under in the 50s.
Yeah, it goes the same way with like the underwear bomber and these people who are set up as patsies, where you have, you know, they're given a motive, they're given an initiative, and you're just looking for someone who's a loose cannon to implement that. How many people do you think are planted like that, not in technology or in those French groups. How many people like that do you think are planted in the Libertarian group or the Tea Party or in anarchist groups? I mean, I know they're out there. I don't know what the numbers would be, but I imagine that they're also, those are the groups you'd really want to monitor, you know.
Well, I've been accused of being one of those people. Mark Stevens said I was probably a COINTELPRO agent, or that I resembled one. And, you know, I say you're nobody until somebody calls you a government agent. So I consider that a compliment, because Alex Jones is often accused of that, too. So I guess I've arrived.
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible that anybody whose job it is to sit around and spy on all the feisty posts that everyone makes that criticize the government, do you think anyone's ever converted by that?
You know, I wonder what the impact would be if they see it long enough. That they might, but I had a conversation with a guy online who was an extreme statist, and from a close friend of mine who knew this guy in high school, so that's how I got into argument with this guy. He told me the background, that this guy was, he was a normal dude, that this was a kind of rural Michigan town, and that, you know, he wore flannel, he went hunting with them, he was just one of the guys. And he did really well in math, and so he went and got a degree from Michigan University in math. But then he joined the military. He specifically joined, I think it was the Navy, and got into intelligence there. And he ran into him a couple times after that in person, spoke with him about what was going on. And he was real excited about his job. He couldn't talk about it, though, because security plans, but he was real excited about what he was doing and that. And a couple years later, he met with him again, and his demeanor was completely different. And he says, you know, that's not true. And he's an Obama supporter even. And he's very state-centered thinking. And he told my friend, he says, well, you don't know me anymore. He says, I've changed. And he acted like he had matured. He's been in the intelligence community for over 12 years. So I would imagine that some people exposed to that information would maybe question it and soften them up to that. I think other people are hardened by it.
Yeah, that's probably more common.
Which sounds crazy. You know, it sounds like what happened with the Nazis during World War II, where they just got to the point of just hating these Jews for not fighting back. Hating them. You're so vile. Why don't you just try to fight back? You're so pathetic. And they got more just angry and just more vile, and it seems to be like there's a real palpable sense of evil around that.
Yeah.
So it's possible they could be softened up, but I also think that they keep seeing this, especially if they see people who are, they're kind of there on some truth, like an out, you brought up Alex Jones. Yeah, but that guy, he's too sensationalistic, and it's almost like he's trying to make a mockery of Second Amendment rights, that kind of thing, which aren't really granted by the Second Amendment, but you know what I'm saying. He's just making a mockery of anyone else who stands up for liberty or anything along those lines.
Who is Obama?
Alex Jones is.
Ah.
That he makes everyone else seem crazy, and then it polarizes the status so that they're like, see, that's the people we have to deal with. These are the crazy people who are irrational, and you get painted with that broad brush drawn over from, you know, crazy town there.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Alex Jones on Piers Morgan the other night, and then last night I saw the head of the Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt, on there for his second mm-hmm. time back. And they basically said the exact same things, but Larry Pratt came off as really calm and hard to argue with, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Larry Pratt knows the information, though. Alex Jones, what I take from that, and I didn't watch the live feed of that.
I watched them both on TV somehow. It was weird.
But with Alex Jones, it's almost like he memorized his script, and then he was just going to shout through it, where Larry Pratt would be able to digest a question and then change his reflective response based on that and make it plug into what's relevant and what you're talking with, instead of just, you know, shouting off from one thing to the other. And that's what Alex Jones will do, is just, he's sticking by his talking points regardless of what the other guy says. He just plows forward and just makes him seem like an incompetent boob.
Yeah, although I actually had a conversation with Nima on the Freedom Fiends recently where I basically stuck up for the fact that Alex Jones did that. I'm not really a fan of Alex Jones, but my kind of take on the whole thing is that most people, a vast majority of people who are watching Piers Morgan night after night are not going to be swayed by a coherent conversation like the one with Larry Pratt. So to me, it kind of didn't really matter. It was more like, you know, criticizing Alex Jones for being Alex Jones was like saying, you know, I'm watching this professional wrestling show and they really shouldn't wear such flamboyant outfits. It kind of gets in the way of enjoying the sport.
Yeah, exactly. Dick Cannon made a reference to that. He's talking about the WWE and how it was more akin to that, you know, the...
Who said
the,
this?
The scripted. Jake Shannon.
Who's that?
Jake Shannon is... Ben Stone called him the most interesting person in the Liberty Movement or something to that effect.
Oh, is he a magician?
He's a hypnotist.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's also a world-renowned grappling trainer for UFC fighting.
Yeah. I'm surprised Ben said that, because Ben knows that I am actually the most interesting person in the Liberty Mission.
And I'll back you up on that.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a little pause here to go sell some things and then come back.
Sweet.
Did your world collapse when Ron Paul didn't win? Don't keep hoping for some great man to fix government through government. Complete your evolution today to full-on anarcho-capitalist. Reward your brain with the Freedom Fiends and quit breaking your heart with some politician. While the libertarians argue,
but who would build the roads?
The Freedom Fiends have already built the roads and moved on to making the great media content of the libertarian paradise. FreedomFiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
So for the second half of this, I was going to ask you a lot of stuff about actual how-to kinds of things, but I'm just going to link the interview that you did. For that, I'm going to link the interview you did with Ben Quaker, where Ben Stone, Bad Quaker, where you actually gave a lot of real how-to information. I'm kind of more interested in asking you about the why and the where we're headed. Do you have a lot? How old are you approximately?
I'm almost 40.
Okay. That question is relevant because I find that people who are older, you know, I'm 48, like I have a less hopeful attitude about the future of the world in my natural lifetime than say Nima, who's 28, you know, it's, he still thinks things are good. And you're kind of halfway in between that. So how do you think, life in America for people like you and I is going to get in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years? Better, worse, both, something else, what?
People are going to acclimate themselves to a new normal. And that sounds like a throwaway statement, but it's not.
That sounds horrible and scary to me.
And it will be. That's why I've made a conscious change away from the lifestyle that I had even. Now, to give you some background, probably more than you would need to know what you're requiring.
Oh, go ahead.
I come from a very blue-collar background. You can't get much more blue-collar than being steel mill workers, and that's where my dad's family all came from. That's what he did, and, you know, working over in East Chicago, which is Gary, Indiana, the murder capital of the country. It's
It says, doesn't it say that when you drive in, welcome to Gary, Indiana, the murder capital of the country?
Yeah, and buckle your seatbelt.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's in acid rain and just nasty pollution, all kinds of things. But
I thought Detroit was the murder capital of the world. Really, Gary, Indiana's trying to take that crown?
Gary, Indiana had the crown. Brownsville, Texas had the crown.
East St. Louis was up there, too.
Yeah, St. Louis is getting up there.
East St. Louis.
Not one of the final four you want to be in, you know. So, well, I grew up in that area, and it's a very Democrat, blue-collar workers where people just assimilate and be part of the collectivism. And I really didn't break free of any of this. Of course, you know, going through and going to college and being the first in my family to do that stuff. You know, I always tested well. I had scholarships for college when I was like in second grade from testing scores and that. And I got other scholarships for my SAT scores, and just so I didn't have to worry too much about, you know, the college bill. So I went to school. It was interesting, and that molded me a little bit, but not the way that maybe that liberal arts college would have hoped to have done. So, but I kept myself open to ideas. I like processing information and sharing ideas. And I ended up becoming a Republican statist, okay? Not really a neocon, but, you know, the flag-waving patriot, you know, loving America and bomb those brown people kind of thing. But I like digging into information and history and that. Now, you mentioned about where Alex Jones was, what it might take to jolt people away from Pierce Morgan, because if someone was appealing to sense and common knowledge like what Pratt was doing, that it might not jab them enough. I had a jab into reality back in 2007 when Ron Paul was speaking at the Republican, the quote-unquote debate. We had the, you know, Rudy Giuliani and Fred Thompson and all them up there. And but what he said, because it broke what I thought I knew about things with the Middle East and that. So when he said that they were bombing us because we were over there, I didn't want to just shout at the screen and tell him he was wrong. I wanted to prove him wrong. So I started doing research into that and found out that he was right, and then started digging deeper. So Alex Jones might be the gateway drug for people who like to get emotionally tied into things, and then to get off of him, hopefully quickly, to get into more rational, logical, you know, research and arguments. Ron Paul was that way for me, to where I started evaluating, you know, our political history and starting to look at our foreign policy and our economy. And from that, I met John Birch Society members who then turned me on to other information. And then it just, you're opening up a huge box of information. You just want to dig deeper and dig deeper. And I wish that would have come in earlier in my life, because here it is, you know, I'm almost hitting 40 now, to come to a realization here. And so it's almost like you want to panic to help share that with other people, but then you look like a fanatic, you know. But I think it's important for people to know it. And you asked about what's going to look like in the near-term future here, and what's going to be 10 years, 15 years. And, you know, just conjecture to see where things might be. I think it's going to be much more in tune with the plan. The plan, not that there's this massive collective of an elite family group that's always been there, but there's just this corporatism that's allowed things to happen to get pushed up. And alongside of that, then you have groups take advantage of that, from things like Agenda 21 or groups that hijacked the Green Party that pretend that they're there for environmental concerns. But they're beating people into submission. And where it's going to be, if it's going to be people just blindly eating what they're told to eat, living where they're told to live, and it's a new kind of modern slavery that we haven't seen before. So people will have to learn to adapt to become part of it. It's going to be a lot like the normal in Demolition Man, where people just went along with it, you know, do not swear. Yeah, I brought that up too, because, yeah, I know that you're in there as well. But
I'd love that movie, you know, even if my face wasn't in it. It's a great movie, and it's a great political statement of the neutered world we could be headed toward.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And I don't think that when most people watch that or when the movie is created, that they intended it to be like that, like a wake-up moment, like a Matrix kind of insight into how things are really working, where your level of awareness is, you realize what you didn't know and that you still don't know a lot, and that there's so much out there that is considered fringe thought, but you look at what they're doing in the mainstream thought is still just lukewarm and indifferent and just apathetic, and they're just wishy-washy on things, and it's not even tangible. I mean, it's just crap. It's mind crap. It's pure amusement, you know, to the root of the word, causing you suspension of thought, not to make you think, you know, intelligently about anything. It's just to keep you busy and your mind numb to what's going on. And as that happens, these people are just getting herded into the cart, so to speak, so that they'll come to this point 10 years from now. You're not going to be able to have a vehicle that you can just hop in and drive to. If you want to drive to Iowa, you can do it. And that's not going to be there anymore. And I don't think that people are going to be also able to consume things that they deem safe now. Well, you know, of course, raw milk would be out of the question, but just the push for GMOs, where if you hadn't been keeping back heirloom seeds, that it won't even be an option for you anymore, because it will be too late for that. And if you didn't already move off onto other networks other than the internet or internet too, and if you're still stuck on those, you won't have any options except for conformity, you know, for communication and for interchange of information. It's the radios have been hijacked a long time ago, newspapers, you know, and of course television. So our last outlet for a bastion of tangible, hard-hitting, real news has been online, with Al Jazeera, you know, Russia Today, all these independent journalists that pop up and share real, tangible information with people. I don't think they can weather what's going to be coming down the pike. So you can't be on that anymore, and people need to hop off of that before, you know, that becomes the lame duck to be on. You don't want to, if you're stuck there, then you're not going to be able to transition out. It's almost like getting out of the dollar if you don't get out of that before.
Well, the Freedom Fiends are actually getting on radio, like real radio nationwide, starting next month. I can't talk a lot about it yet, but that's kind of the opposite of, it sounds like you're saying, like, need to go more underground. We're going more above ground.
Yeah, I think you guys are going broad, though. You're not moving away from and stopping the podcasting and moving only to radio, though, right?
No.
So you're just making that go broader, which is going to bring people in, though, who normally listen to, like, AM or FM stations, that it will allow them to realize that, hey, there's something else here you didn't even know about.
Do you think it's going to bring the SWAT team into my house?
Yeah, It very well may be. You know, you have those FCC vans going around to see if you're having those unlicensed amateur radio stations, those pirate radio stations, transmitting low-powered signals, and they're going to trace it down to you. Like, well, wait a minute, he's streaming from the internet.
No. I'm not talking about pirate radio or low-power or microtransmitter. I'm talking about, like, we're going to be on major, like, cover whole major metropolitan area radio stations, where you get in your car and you're in Austin or Dallas or Chicago, and we're on the radio.
That's what I'm talking about. Point, you don't, I hope you don't become a sellout then at that point, because you know what happens to people who get to be that popular. They're either because they're going to be complacent with, you know, what they're allowed to broadcast with, or they disappear, one or the other.
I don't see that happening. I could see me being disappeared, but I don't see me disappearing out of complacency.
Right, right. But,
I think
the argument you see with
the only thing we're going to do is not cuss, which is going to be fucking hard.
Difficult.
Well, actually, the show we're going to be doing originally is not going to be live. It's going to be pre-taped, and so we will be able to make sure we don't cuss in it.
To beat it out.
Cut it out. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, that'll work.
Yeah. So, so you've painted a pretty bleak picture here. Why don't you make me feel better now? Cause you've made me feel a lot worse, and, I would like to feel better, even if you have to lie. No. Do you think there's any possible, possibility of things getting better, or even people being able to restructure their lives in a way that they can live as free as they want to within this Demolition Man type 40-year-old virgin singing, "I wish I were an Oscar Mayer wiener forced world" that we're going to have. Yeah, and you know, my only problem with Demolition Man, if it were for one little detail, I would say that's a documentary from the future, not a strict scripted comedy.
What detail is that?
The cops don't have guns in it. There's no fucking way that world is going to exist without a cop on every corner who's like totally militarized.
Right. Yeah, that seems a little far-fetched.
Yeah, although they can do, you know what they can do? They can probably do the thing. There's a couple examples of it. One is what they do with livestock. You can do a thing with livestock where you have an electric fence that you put up temporarily, and the animals get shocked, and they learn not to touch the fence, and they teach their offspring not to touch the fence. And then eventually you can take away that electric fence and just have a piece of twine, and they know not to touch the fence. And they used to do a thing in some of the Nazi concentration camps too, where they literally didn't have a fence, and it was just if you went past a certain point, you'd get shot. And eventually, like, they didn't even have to be so hands-on with shooting people, because people just wouldn't go beyond the fence. But I kind of think that the gene to resist tyranny is strong enough that even if you raised four generations in a row that were trained to know nothing other than obedience, every once in a while you'd get someone who would try to literally or figuratively walk past that fence.
Right. And the freedom and liberty that's welling up in that individual will be purer than anything that in modern America now calls freedom. You know, they're just blowing it away, and that's not real freedom. That person would embody what's like true and righteous about the ownership of yourself, you know, because they'd have to fight against it, you know, because they'd have to fight against the tyranny that's controlling them. So I think that would be a huge, like, blossom to the whole thing. A positive side of it is that it would be a more accurate depiction of what real liberty and freedom will create, what real free markets will turn into out of that. But it's like you have to have all that crap and manure to be able to grow out of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Although in a lot of post-apocalyptic anti-utopian fiction, like, you know, Demolition Man is the happy, shiny side of it. And, you know, probably Brave New World or 1984 is the scary, dark side of it. In a lot of those stories, in Demolition Man and in Brave New World, literally baby creation and rearing is taken out of the family and put into laboratories, to where literally they would probably breed out, you know, the gene that would make people want to not be ruled. You know, they would kill those fetuses at birth, or just not even create any.
Sanitize the genome.
Yeah.
Make them like Thornton Applewhite, you know, the guy who captured himself to catch the Hale-Bopp comet flying around the Earth.
But the thing is that nature is such a strong force that no matter what you do to it, it really can't be stopped. I mean, there's always going to be the weed growing through the crack somehow.
Yeah.
Which, in Brave New World is the Spartan guy, whatever his name is, John whatever. And then in Demolition Man, he's actually named John Spartan, you know, the weed that gets through the cracks and changes society.
Yeah, yeah.
And then gets killed.
Worms.
So I still don't feel better. I'm laughing, which I guess makes me feel better, but because I'm thinking about worms and Demolition Man, and I guess I'm thinking about hope for the future. I feel like in the long run things look good, but I think in the short run, which is where I live, you know, in the 10, 20 year, 30 year run, I'm kind of scared and don't want to be, man. I feel freer in a way than I've ever felt, because I know more about how life works than I ever have. I'm not starving anymore. I have a stable life. I have a wife I love. We dig each other. I totally love her company. She's actually working late today. She's usually home by now, and I'm kind of like, I miss her. And we've been married 7 years. We've been together 8 years, and it's like, that's pretty good to be with somebody 8 years and be like, wow, she's usually home by now. I miss her, you know? So things are good, but the things that could make life bad all feel like they're out of my control, you know?
Yeah, I know. But it's liberating to know what's going on, to be happy with what you got. So it's, you know, love your family and love on them and just, you know, kind of see what happens. And you can't control everything, and you shouldn't want to either. But, man, it's just powerful being having your mind liberated of all those cobwebs and all that status crap, and even wanting to control others with whatever left-right agenda. If you throw off all of that, then you yourself are freer for not being burdened down with all that garbage, you know?
You know, it's the irony of it. And that would also almost be a great place to end. You know, we're going to go a little while longer, but really, like, that's the redemption in the third act. I should have just said worms and cut it there because that was so beautiful. That was so beautiful. But then I just immediately had this thought I had to jump in with, which is the irony is that what I do with my day, what I do with every day is I get on this microphone and yap to the air and people listen to it. And people write me all the time and call into the show and say, like, this has been an important part of their journey to, like, self-liberation, to freeing their mind and their body and their spirit or whatever. But in doing that, it's such a 24/7 job for me that it actually kind of hurts me. Like, I'm kind of suffering for their sins or, like, suffering for their redemption. Now, yeah. I don't want to pretend I'm not Jesus. I'm not a martyr. But it's like being half of the fiends is a full-time job to where, like, it makes me more aware of the tyranny out there than I want to be.
Yeah, it's a difficult place to be on.
Yeah,
that precipice. But at the same time, you're needed, and there's a huge audience, and you have that responsibility. I mean, it's almost like it's your duty. Not that you have a moral obligation to, but that you willfully put yourself there.
Well, it's my duty in that I wake up in the morning and it's all I want to do. It's kind of a self-imposed duty to where it gives me a real reason to wake up in the morning and I feel like I'm doing something valuable with my life.
Oh, yeah, because it really matters and it really translates to something that's impacting other people's lives in a positive way to where it's going to spring off of them to other people, and you're impacting real change for the better. Anyone can impact change and create chaos, but to create order out of that and to make things right is much more difficult to do, and it's going against the grain. And so I always like, you know, vying for the underdog and standing up for people who can't stand up for themselves. And so when you come out and help those people, you're teaching them how to fish, so to speak, you know, with life, and teaching them about, you know, that they're sovereign individuals and that they're not subservient to anybody.
It's kind of weird that in us doing that, in you and I and everyone who's doing that, you know, I never, when I was little, I didn't ever say I want to grow up and be an enemy of the state. That's the last thing I ever wanted to be, but I am treated like one. You know, we are treated like one. The mainstream media, the president, the politicians, they all think that we are something to be routed out and dealt with. How the hell did that happen, man? How does speaking the truth and speaking non-aggression and non-violence and teaching being a good person, how did that turn out to be the worst thing you could be in the minds of nearly half of the world or half of America?
Well, when everyone's falling to a reprobate mindset and the world's upside down and left is right and up is down, at least you know by them calling you insane and wrong and immoral that what you're doing is right then.
So I like that.
It's like you should wear that letter A with pride, you know.
The scarlet A.
The
scarlet A for anarchy. I think that's a good place to end, and it made me laugh. So, Worms, man, thanks for being on here.
Worm. Thanks for having me, man.
Yep. I appreciate it, Randall Perry. And do you have a website or somewhere people can find you?
Yeah, I have a couple. I have the security firm MediMac Security, M-A-D-I-M-A-K, security.com. And the tech consulting is domain-logic.com.
Cool. And I will link those in the site. Thanks, man. It's been really good having you on.
It's been fun. Thanks, Michael.
Worms.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes. Follow twitter.com/fiendtorrents to grab the past episodes and new ones as they post. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents, while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding the Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. That's twitter.com/fiendtorrents.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.